When we talk about ways to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, the focus tends to fall on the big obvious sources like power plants and big factories and all those cars and trucks out there. But smaller and more humble buildings put out emissions too. Lots of homes, single family and multiple, still burn fossil fuels for heat and hot water. Look around the landscape. There are lots of buildings. Building emissions get a renewed emphasis in a recent report from the California Energy Commission. The emphasis is applauded by groups that advocate for greater action on climate change, including NRDC, which we used to call the Natural Resources Defense Council. That's where Pierre Delforge is a senior scientist in the Building Decarbonization, Climate, and Clean Energy Program, and he's our guest in the exchange. Pierre, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thank you for having me on.
So for the people just getting to know the concept, can you give us an overview of building decarbonization?
Sure. So building decarbonization is really about transitioning to clean energy in our buildings instead of using fossil fuels like natural gas or propane. We often think that, you know, if we have solar on our roof, that's, you know, we're done with clean energy. But the reality is that the biggest source of emissions in your home or your office may be in the heating closet or the basement because of the gas or propane that is being burnt there for space heating or water heating. In California, about 90% of buildings are heated by gas or propane. And instead, what we are advocating for and what we call building decarbonization is really about moving to high-efficiency electric heat pump technology and powering that with clean electricity generated from renewable sources.
So when I was about to ask about whether, you know, we're talking 90% of buildings heated by gas or propane, so it sounds like it's quite a mix of residential and commercial.
Right. It's and to be honest, it's mostly natural gas is the dominant fuel in most of California. There's some areas which don't have access to gas where you have still have a lot of propane. And in commercial buildings and office buildings, it's also there's also a lot of gas use, gas boilers for central heat and for hot water. And even in buildings that already use electric heating, which, you know, there are some, and even then, decarbonization is also important because that's about moving from, you know, conventional electric heat that still generates a lot of emissions at the power plant to generate that electricity, and to move that to move towards much higher efficiency heat pump technology to reduce grid emissions. So it's about fossil fuels, also about efficiency. Making sure that, you know, we electrify where needed, we use clean electricity, and we use energy efficiency both for the home and for the heating and hot water appliances.
I was going to ask about precisely that part of it because you can have a building that is all electrically heated, but if you're relying on power plants that are burning coal, for example, you're not gaining much, are you?
That's right, at least in the short term, because we know that we have a trajectory to go to much cleaner electricity. In California, there's a law called SB 100 to get to zero carbon electricity by 2045. And Oregon has a goal to phase out coal by 2030. So we are heading towards much cleaner electricity. It's not quite as clean yet as it could be, but it, you know, we already made major progress in that direction. And the question is, how do we better use that clean energy or that energy electricity, which is getting cleaner, for good use and to be able to clean up our buildings? And, you know, same thing for our cars. You know, moving to electric vehicles powered by cleaner electricity is going to be increasingly clean as the grid gets cleaner.
We are talking about greenhouse gas emissions from buildings with Pierre Delforge, who's with the NRDC, Senior Scientist in Building Decarbonization, Climate, and Clean Energy Program. You can join the conversation on the exchange. We do have all hands on deck today. You can get into the conversation by phone at 800-838-3760 or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Just as an area of trying to address greenhouse gas emissions, is building decarbonization a somewhat harder reach than some of the other moves to clean up emissions? Is it, in other words, is it not low-hanging fruit, Pierre?
For a long time, we've focused on energy efficiency as the primary strategy to reduce emissions and energy use, and that still is maybe the most important an essential strategy. But we've also realized that this is not sufficient to get us where we need to go. So it's necessary, but we need to do more, and we need to move from fossil fuels to cleaner electricity if we are to achieve our emissions goals. But I also want to make to mention that this sounds all very much climate driven, and it is. But what may matter more to many people is really the other benefits that come with that transition. It's going to save people money on their utility bills. It's going to reduce air pollution, particularly indoor in homes where burning gas in a furnace today is generates emissions, indoor air pollution, even if it's supposed to be vented outdoors. You know, often the venting isn't completely effective, and you end up breathing combustion gases, which are not great for your health. So that's going to, electric heating just gets eliminates that. It's better for your safety, especially if you live in an earthquake area where you're probably better not to have gas in your home. And finally, it's just more comfortable. Transitioned myself, my own home, to electric heating last summer, and I just spent my first winter with that electric heat, and it really makes a huge difference. You used to have a gas furnace that used to blast hot air every few minutes, making a lot of noise, and you could wake up at 6 a.m. with major pressure changes from the furnace coming on. Now I just don't hear the heating. It's on, whether it's on and off, it's silent, it's stable. It's just such a big upgrade. So, something to think about. It's comfort, safety, indoor air quality and health, and saving money on your bill. So that's all the benefits that come with also reducing emissions from transitioning to high efficiency electric heat.
All right. So even if you're thinking macro, there are certainly some micro benefits to each household from making these kinds of changes. It seems like obviously there's a few choices here. You can obviously build new buildings that are emission free. Let's talk about retrofitting old buildings to become emission free. I mean, how costly and cumbersome can it be to decarbonize a building, particularly if you're talking like a major apartment building or something like that?
Yeah, it all depends on the building, of course. But the reality is, it's often costs more upfront to retrofit, and the cost will come down as the contractors and builders get more familiar with the technology. And it's just like any new technology, like electric cars. The first models are more expensive. The equipment is more expensive, and even the installers, they're not as familiar, so they charge more. But as we increase familiarity, as there's increased demand, we expect that cost will come down, and it will become more affordable. And that's what these California policies are about, is to really develop the market so that we, people really have a real choice in being able to access this technology in an affordable manner. And that's where California is signaling that it needs to go, and where it's putting its money. You mentioned the Energy Commission report, but last year the California legislature also passed two bills. One of them allocates $200 million over 4 years to incentive programs to accelerate the market development of clean electric technology and other low emissions technologies in buildings.
So the state is pushing the economics on this to make sure that it is less costly sooner.
That's correct, and this is just about upfront costs, and then there's the operating costs, the utility bills, and often, already today, you can save money on bills when using electric heating. Again, it depends on what building you live in, what the local utility rates are, and how efficient an equipment you choose. But if you choose the right equipment, and your building is is efficient enough. Doesn't have to be, you know, super high performance, but you want some insulation and some decent performance windows. Then the chances are you're going to save money on your bills. Gas is seen as the cheap fuel, but increasingly gas prices are going up, heat pump heating is today cost competitive and often saves money. I save about 40% on my heating bills myself with my switch out. So you can really save money over time. And if you're using propane or electric resistance, the conventional electric technology today, then you can save even a lot more money. And it's actually worth not even waiting for the time to replace your appliances. It's actually worth doing it as soon as possible because the chance is going to pay back in just a few years in bill savings.
We are talking about building decarbonization here on the Jefferson Exchange with Pierre Delforge, a senior scientist at the NRDC, formerly the Natural Resources Defense Council. He's in the Building Decarbonization, Climate, and Clean Energy Program, and you can join the conversation here on the Exchange. Your thoughts about maybe doing away with the way you heat and gain hot water in your home right now and going all electric. How does that appeal to you? Do you have that already? Let's hear from you at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We've referenced the recent report from the California Energy Commission a couple of times. It came out in late January. This is the Biennial Integrated Energy Policy Report, or IEPR. And what does this do then?
Yeah, the energy report by the commission really sets guidelines for other agencies and stakeholders on where the state is headed in terms of energy policy. It basically implements the directions from the legislature and the governor and translates that into actionable policies. And this year was a big shift in the Energy Commission's policy from being purely focused on energy efficiency, which again continues to be critical, but is also focusing on, well, how do we go beyond just efficiency and we actually target emissions? So instead of just focusing on zero net energy in new buildings, how do we aim for zero emissions buildings, where we look at the emissions of energy, both from gas and electricity? So this is, and building decarbonization was a major focus of the report, which is the first time that this was the case. So it's just a big shift, and it goes with the two bills which I mentioned. So it basically shows that California is serious about this transition and is starting to implement policies to move there.
You've touched on it a couple times here, and I just want to focus on it again because it provided an oh yeah moment for me, the idea that you can get a building that is zero net electricity, but it can still have emissions.
That's correct, because you can be zero net energy, where you basically, what that means is the building generates as much energy over the course of a year as it uses from the grid. But what happens though is the building is really generating a lot, for example, from solar energy on solar panels generate a lot of energy in the summer where solar is abundant, but usage is sometimes less. And you're sending it back to the grid, and then in the middle of the winter, you're actually using a lot of energy from the grid because your solar panel is not emitting as much. So that's zero net energy on an annual basis, but it's not zero emissions. And the other thing is that when you're still using natural gas in a zero net energy building, you still have significant emissions from gas that you can't reduce to zero. To get to zero emissions, we really need to get to use clean energy like all electric with efficiency to be able to achieve zero emissions.
You mentioned the savings that you've realized in your own home by switching to electricity, which I assume is a heat pump system. You're touting heat pumps as the real answer here. What is it that heat pumps do that makes them different from the old electric baseboard heaters, for example?
Right. Heat pumps are really critical to this transition. They're really the underlying technology. And what a heat pump is, it's basically like an air conditioner that can also work in reverse. So in summer, it works as an air conditioner and can cool your house. In winter, it just reverses and instead it heats the house. And it does that by using what is called a refrigerant fluid that absorbs heat from outdoors and moves that heat and releases it inside the building. So it's really about moving heat instead of generating heat, or like, you know, you do with burning gas. And it turns out that burning gas or any fossil fuel is actually pretty inefficient. But when you use electricity to move heat from one place to another, that's much higher efficiency, typically 3 to 5 times more efficient than a combustion process. And so a heat pump is basically harnessing that technology, that air conditioning, to heat buildings. And it can be used for space heating. It's basically, you know, a reversible air conditioner. It can be used for water heating, where, you know, a heat pump water heater looks just like a standard water heater with a small heat pump on top that is going to heat the water. I mean, think of it as a refrigerator in reverse. Instead of taking the heat out of the fridge and putting it outside in the room, it does the reverse. It takes the heat outside the room and moves it into the tank, and that's how you get hot water. And so these processes are super high efficiency, and you know they're really the key technology to be able to efficiently electrify buildings.
Even so, Pierre, I mean, if this many people convert to electrical devices, is there enough electricity currently being generated, or do we project enough being generated within 5 years, 10 years, by 2025, for example, to cover all the people who might want to make this transition?
That's a really important question. And the answer is that as we move to heat pumps, you know, we also are going to save a lot of energy from homes that currently use electric heating. And that's going to free up a lot of spare capacity on the grid. The other point to consider is that today, at least in California, the grid is sized to be able to serve peak cooling loads in the summer. That's when the grid, you know, reaches its peak, when it uses the most electricity. And that leaves a lot of spare capacity for the grid in the winter, where you don't have these cooling loads, of course, and where you have a lot of spare capacity to power these heating loads from heat pumps as we transition from gas to heating. So there is a lot of spare capacity. And also the other benefits of heat pumps is that they are flexible loads. Like, for example, if you heat water with a heat pump, you can use your water tank as a thermal storage device, so you can heat the water in the middle of the day when you have plenty of solar, or in the middle of the night when demand is low, and use that water whenever you need. But you are really helping the grid by absorbing excess or surplus electricity at times when it's abundant, and using it when, you know, people need. So electric technology is really a way to balance the grid and to help integrate more renewable energy in the grid.
We had a lot of people in our listening area who lost their electrical power nearly 2 weeks ago because of snowstorms, and we have an email from one of them. Jenny in Roseburg writes, "I am listening to this as I sit in a house that is now 2 weeks without electricity. I'm able to send this email and run my pellet stove for heat because of my solar panels. Could you please talk about resilience and emergency preparedness as you talk about electric heating, given climate change and huge storms and the potential Cascadia earthquake? Thank you for that, Jenny."
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your power outage, and I hope it gets resolved quickly. It is a real problem that absolutely needs to be resolved. I mean, if we are going to rely on the grid for all our needs, we need to make sure it's resilient and hardened for climate change. So, you know, as we've heard with PG&E and wildfire situations in California, there's, you know, real questions, and, you know, we're going to have to do this, and that's part of these decarbonization initiative, is making sure that we have a reliable power supply. But let me point out that even today for people who use gas stoves or furnaces and water heaters, a lot of these furnaces require electricity to run as well. So it's not that they are completely resilient today either. It's just that we are moving towards a higher use of electricity, and we need to have a more resilient system.
Another email from Becca in Lane County, who says, "I have baseboard heating. That's the old electric kind of heating." She says, "She asks, is that better or worse than the plug-in oil heaters?"
It really depends on the grids. So I wouldn't be able to answer that. I think over time, electricity is going to get cleaner, and your baseboard might, probably going to get better than oil heaters. They're certainly better for your health. But I really encourage you to consider, when possible, moving to a heat pump, because that's going to slash your bills by a factor of two or three. So it's going to pay back for itself pretty quickly.
You've heard the criticism of the reliance on renewable energy. The president went on that riff last weekend about not being able to watch TV if the wind is blowing. I'm sure some other people would like to hear you address that concern.
Well, we have lots of different resources, solar and wind and geothermal, that when you balance them together, and hydro as well, and when you have and can integrate all these resources in a regional integrated grid, then the wind is always blowing somewhere and geothermal is always on, and you always have hydropower ready to back up the other resources. So it turns out that a renewable grid is actually a pretty resilient grid. And it's, the reality is that even the big centralized fossil fuel power plants are not as resilient as it seems. A lot of them went out during latest cold weather in the Midwest and on the East Coast. So we really need to have a balanced portfolio of energy generation, and renewable resources can provide that. Well, obviously it has to be managed, and we have need to have some storage. But we see, and California is already at 34% renewables, moving pretty quickly towards 60% by 2030 and 100%. And so we are solving this problem as we're moving forward.
Building decarbonization certainly on the planning process in California now, with the release in January of the California Energy Commission's Integrated Energy Policy Report that embraces a lot of the stuff we're talking about here, with Pierre Delforge, who is a senior scientist at the NRDC in the Building Decarbonization, Climate, and Clean Energy Program. Pierre, thank you for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.